Nandhata was the emperor of the entire world. Therefore, he was opulent. Kings lived in opulence, palaces, all the best things. We see the British, they were ruling the world, a large portion of the world, so they brought opulence, gold and jewels, ivory and marble from all over the world, and built many big buildings in London. In India, even up to a recent time when there were kings, they were those who were actually very powerful and rich, they would have displays of opulence. In fact, the British used to send reports back to Britain how opulent the Indian kings are, because they had their king there, or their queen, Victoria. So they thought they were, the queen was in a very prestigious position, but compared to the opulence shown by the Indian kings, when they came out in parade or when they held court, what such fantastic opulence. They were surprised. That's why the British, the Dutch, the French, the Portuguese, they were all fighting with each other to come to India. Because India was so opulent. But the kings especially, they would live with so much gold and jewels and ivory and pearls and marble palaces. Even ordinary people. Every ordinary people, even now, we'll be wearing gold here, like next. Gold on the upper part of the body and silver on the lower part, and jewels and so many things. And silk, so much opulence. So the kings, they made a show of opulence. That means that one thing is to impress others, and also because they like that. They're attached to it. They like to live in opulence. People like to show how opulent they are. Nowadays they show how opulent they are, but if you show this car, Rolex watch, same idea is there, to show some opulence. But the item which they show, it's not of permanent value. A Mercedes car may be very opulent, but its value decreases every day. Whereas items of actual value, they retain their value. If you have a gold ring now, it will still be valuable. Even if the whole stock market crashes, the inflation goes on, gold is always valuable. So the kings, especially, they lived in great opulence. Even many ordinary people, the opulence they had, ordinary people would have silk clothing, maybe not wearing all the time, but at least for special occasions they would wear silk. And they would regularly wear some gold jewelry, and then for special occasions they would bring out extra jewelry for a wedding function, something like this. Great opulence. So you can imagine how opulent the king of the world must be. We don't have any king in our experience at this time who was so rich. At the time of the partition of India, the richest, most opulent king must have been the Nizam of Hyderabad. But then he was a crazy man who lived in poverty while his rooms, he kept himself like a beggar, while his rooms, huge palace, rooms and rooms full of jewels. But he would keep himself as a beggar and would be very cautious not to spend any money. So he was a crazy man. But he was only the king for a small era, less than today's Andhra Pradesh. But he was so wealthy, like so jewels, elephants. That is the sign of an opulent king. One sign, he can maintain many elephants. Because to maintain an elephant is a costly affair. It's not like keeping a pet cat or dog. An elephant eats so much. So to maintain, you have to bring every day huge amounts of grasses. It's not a small thing to maintain. So Gajapati, that was the name of one of the lines of the kings. That's one name for kings. Gajapati means who's the master of many elephants. So that was a sign of opulence. And nowadays, we don't see But even in those days, they were so opulent, the kings. But you can imagine how opulent must have been the king of the whole world. All the best things from all over the world would be in his palace, and all the best artists and craftsmen, they would all be serving him. And opulence would be not only opulence in terms of ivory, silk, filigree, and so many things like this, but another opulence of a great king would be he would be surrounded by great personality, highly intelligent ministers, and the best singers, the most beautiful women, everything materially best would be at his disposal. So Mankata, he was the king of the whole world. He was also a devotee of Krishna. He performed many sacrifices for satisfying Lord Vishnu. He was rich in material opulence, more than we can imagine, more than anyone can imagine at the present time. At the present time, Bill Gates is supposed to be the richest person in the world, so they say. But famous, he's building some. How much they're spending on his home? He's spending some $1 billion or something to build his home. But it won't be. If you see the palaces of the kings in India, I'm sure it won't be as nice as that. They don't know, actually. He's spending so much money on mechanical gadgets that when you walk from one room to another, the door opens. If you're in, there'll be a telephone in every room, and the telephone, when it rings, it'll be the telephone nearest to you only that will ring. So it's convenient for you. So many ideas he's got how to spend money on his $1 billion home, whatever it costs. But it won't be as nice. I doubt if it will be as nice as the palaces they built in India previously. Nowadays they're building reinforced concrete apartment blocks which fall down, many of them, after some time. It's very hot in the summer, as you know. So Nandhata, he must have been living in such opulence, we cannot imagine nowadays. But even he could not imagine the opulence that was made by this sober human. He was defeated. And we can't, just like we read about the apsaras in the heavenly planets, how beautiful they are compared to any woman of this earth. The women in the heavenly planets, they're so much beautiful, and their bodies, the women on this planet, they have to wash, take a bath, put on perfume, otherwise they smell bad. But in the heavenly planets, the bodies of the women, they automatically give out a sweet smell, which can be smelled for a long distance. So that's an opulence we can't imagine. And they're many more times more beautiful than Miss Universe or Miss World here. And then again, it's described that in the spiritual world, the goddesses of fortune, they're many times more beautiful than the apsaras in the heavenly planets. And then again, it's described that the gopis, they are even more beautiful than the Lakshmi. So we can't imagine. We have a concept that this is such beautiful woman, very beautiful form. What can be more beautiful than this? We think. There's more. It's beyond our conception. How the apsaras, they can be even 1,000 times more beautiful than the most beautiful woman here. And then the goddesses of fortune are even more beautiful. So we can't imagine, because we have a limited scope of understanding, we can't imagine how beautiful they can be. We only have our limited range of thinking. So Mandhata, he was thinking that who can be more opulent than me? Sobhari Muni showed that actually he's many more times opulent. So there are different gradations. These are described in the Vedic literatures. Actually, it's described in the Vedic literatures that even here in Srimad Bhagavatam, it's described that even more opulent and conducive to material enjoyment than the heavenly planets are the subterranean heavenly planets. Villa Swarga, it's called. The planets below the earth, where the sun doesn't reach, which are inhabited by demoniac people, and they have a very high standard of material enjoyment, but they're not devotees of Krishna. It means they must have performed some kinds of superficially pious activities. but they're not devotees of Krishna. So they get the chance to enjoy. Krishna gives them the chance to enjoy, but they always have the fear in the back of their heads that death would come at a certain point in time, which does, and then their opulence is finished. So they have such a standard of enjoyment. But then if you take what is all the enjoyment in the material world? Just like you may think, well, if I was living in an opulent palace, I would have more enjoyment. Or if I could marry a very beautiful wife instead of a not so beautiful wife, then I would not. But actually the fact is that despite increased facilities for enjoyment, you don't necessarily enjoy more in the ultimate sense. That means certainly a king is enjoying more than a beggar. It means enjoying is that all facilities for enjoyment, but internally his level of satisfaction is not more. And what he enjoys, you see, the king, he may be eating a very well prepared meal with ghee and sugar and so many nice ingredients. And the beggar may be eating, they cook some chapati. But he may be, the actual sensation of enjoyment, he may be enjoying more. And often that's a fact. We see in the modern age, many rich people, they have lots of money, and they can cook nice food, but they can't enjoy it because they have no appetite. Because they don't do any work or exercise, and eat rich food, and they get indigestion. And anyway, they're full of so many anxieties that even if they're sitting to eat, they're thinking about their business and how it's failing. Whereas the poor man, he simply cooks some chapati, his wife cooks on the stone, they just get some bricks and make a fire, and they cook and they have good appetite and no worries and they enjoy. So they may even be enjoying more, the actual experience of enjoyment. According to their karma, their level of enjoyment or their facilities for enjoyment are different. But in terms of the actual experience of enjoyment, the beggar may be enjoying more than the rich man. And actually, in many ways, you see, actually the chapatis they cook on the fire, that wood fire, I think maybe better than when you get your refined flour and everything. The rich man is eating, they're cooking on the gas. And probably that chapati is even nicer for him and more nourishing. Same thing, you may have the most beautiful wife, but does that mean your sensation of enjoyment in sex life is more than that of the donkey or the dog? And it's the same thing. You may sleep on in a first class palace with a fan, AC, or the old days, there would be a man fanning you. Actually, not even like these ones up ahead, these big fans. Have you seen that? Where they pull it, huge sheet with a rope. It goes back and forward, makes a big fan all through the rope. So someone will be standing there, pulling it. So that you may be living, you may have this opulent facility, but when you're asleep, you may be asleep on a silk bed, or you may be asleep on the floor, but when you're asleep, you're asleep. It's the same pleasure, the same thing. A poor man who works hard, his body is tired, he has no worry, and he goes to sleep, he has no worries because he has nothing to lose. So he has no anxiety about stocks and shares or all these things. So he goes to sleep. Very nice. Even you see these people, they'll sleep just on the floor. Even the floor is not level. They'll sleep. Whereas a man with so many activities and anxieties, he may have an air-conditioned room, palace, silk, all these things. But he's not sleeping nicely. Or even if he does sleep, it's the same for all the facilities. Once you're asleep, it's the same sensation of just being asleep. So the whole idea actually of material enjoyment, it's a myth. That you will enjoy more by getting material facilities. This Sobhari Muni was thinking, let me get more facilities to enjoy. But we'll find from the upcoming verses that he wasn't satisfied. Despite having more opulence than the king of the world and having 50 beautiful wives. Can you imagine you offer someone? We'll give you we'll give you opulence. You can have more opulence than owning a whole world. And beautiful wives. And beautiful body. The Sobhari Muni had all facilities for material enjoyment. But he wasn't happy. He became frustrated. And Mangata, he saw that this, now my son-in-law, who was the great sage, became his son-in-law. He's outdone him in material facility. He was also, what is it, this having material facility? Actually, it's not even so much for your enjoyment as for showing prestige. So Mandhata, he had so many big buildings and elephants and chariots. So even apart from the point of having a big building, what do you need? You don't actually need a big building, but it's some prestige to show others. So in the same way, people, they wear a Rolex watch. You don't need a Rolex watch to see the time. You can get a 100 rupee one because it might burn down more quickly. Rolex watch is also good quality. But just to see the time, you don't need a Rolex watch. You can use any watch. That I read somewhere that the head of the Rolex watch company, someone asked him, how is the watch business going on? He said, I'm not in the watch business. I'm in the prestige business. I'm not selling watches, I'm selling prestige. But then he knew what his business was. Similarly, you can get a Mercedes car, no doubt it's very comfortable, drives nicely, but more than that is to show prestige. Even they made this car, this Maruti car, that is a little bit longer than the oversized matchbox, the ordinary Maruti car. They called it Maruti Esteem. Esteem means to have some sense of personal pride, self-esteem. So that's the idea, that if you just have an ordinary matchbox Maruti, then still you're above someone who has just a Bajaj, Hamara Bajaj, just a scooter. But you can really have more esteem if you have a big, long Maruti. Now that's finished because they're bringing so many Cielos and Mercedes and other foreign cars. But the idea, you see, they're promoting the idea that if you have this car, you'll have more prestige. And actually, it all comes down to attracting the opposite sex. Otherwise, there's no need for all this. This show that I have got so much opulence is simply meant to show, especially a man wants to show all the women, you see how great, how wonderful I am. I have a big car, big house, plenty of money. And I am a suitable person to enjoy with. Come and enjoy with me. This is the message that's being sent out. Sobhari Muni, he was also, he wanted to show opulence. As long as he didn't want to enjoy, he wanted to live in a renounced position. He was quite happy to live without all these things. But as soon as his idea came to enjoy, then immediately, let me get so many big, let me impress my wife. So that's what happened. So, someone becomes attracted to have a relationship with the opposite sex. And then he needs a home, land, money, relatives, expansion. He's expanding his material position. So generally this is not very good for spiritual life. To want to live in opulent, desire to live in a very opulent position, it's not considered very good for spiritual life. Even that, you see Mandhata, he was also a great king. And there have been so many great kings described in the Bhagavatam. like Parikshit Maharaj, Yudhishthir Maharaj, Ambarish Maharaj, who were great emperors and lived in great opulence. They were great devotees also. So if one is actually devoted enough, he can live in opulence and offer everything to Krishna, not be attached to them. See, the Pandavas, they were also living in the forest. They didn't like to live in the forest because they wanted to execute their occupational duties of ruling over the citizens. But especially Yudhishthir, in many ways he liked living in the forest because he was of a renounced mood. So now we're living in the forest, we're very fortunate, we don't have so many managerial responsibilities for our kingdom. So we can, we have the time to meet so many sages and discuss with them and take advice from them. So that's the general prescription for spiritual life, to live as simply as possible. Not that we recommend everyone becomes a beggar, that's not necessary. But to live as, so not to overcomplicate our lives. You see, there's so much opulence, but then to maintain it all, it's also a big headache. If someone wants a big house, if you have a big house, you have to think about how to keep it clean, and then the more area you have, the more things can go wrong. There may be a crack in the wall or a leak, or the more facilities you have, the more headache it is to maintain it. So generally for spiritual life, it's recommended not to clutter our lives up with excessive material possessions or so-called facilities. We call it facility, but actually if it makes you do more work, then how is it a facility? Facility is something that is supposed to facilitate your other activities. But we spend so much time just looking after the facility, then how does it improve our lives? So that is the recommendation, to live as simply as possible. Not that you don't live comfortably in this world, but don't become involved in extraneous so-called development. Keep things simple so that you have time to chant Hare Krishna more. Modern age is very complex. There are so many different kinds of machines, and in every home there's an increasing number of machines to do everything. But then to get the machine, you have to work. When the machine breaks, it's a big headache, you have to spend so much money, and because you're dependent on the machine, then you don't know what to do, your washing machine breaks down, and you have no experience how to wash the clothes by hand, so you don't know what to do. And this way we become entangled more and more. So the recommendation is keep things simple, spend more time for chanting Hare Krishna. We'll see here how Sobhari Muni, despite fulfilling his material desire to live in great opulence and have beautiful wives, he became frustrated and he realized after some time that I made a mistake. I got entangled in all these things. I should have concentrated on my spiritual development. Similarly, a devotee may sometimes become entangled in so many extraneous things. But if he's fortunate, Krishna shows his mercy to him, then he may awake from that dream at some point in time and realize that my real business in life is not simply to increase my so-called material facilities. My real business, as Prabhupada once said, our real business is to become mad after Krishna. So we should see, there's no bar on adopting material facilities and this and that, but we should see if we're actually using these in the service of Krishna, if they're actually helping us to come closer to Krishna, or if we're simply materially attached to them, in which case they obstruct our progress on the path towards Krishna. It may be a very subtle difference. We may not even recognize it in our own mind. We may think, yes, I'm using everything for Krishna, but actually we're attached to it for our own comfort. So we should be very careful. Motivation in spiritual life is very important. Are we actually doing everything for Krishna, or are we doing something for our own comfort or prestige? These things we should examine. Sobhari Muni became lax in examining his motives. His intelligence became polluted, and he fell away from the standard of devotional service. We see that devotees are practicing nicely, Krishna conscious, but they become entangled in Maya. The entanglement, it may take, it may be very subtle at first. You may think, well, let me, you may, I'm preaching to such and such a person, but not realizing that you have some subtle attachment for that person, which develops as a material relationship. And then your material propensities increase more and more. You may think, I'm reading this book, which is giving some psychological advice that will help me to be a better person in Krishna consciousness, but you become, without realizing, very subtly, you become contaminated by mundane ideas. Then you lose faith in Vishnu and the Vaishnavas in the process of devotional service. You go away and you criticize the devotees, citing all these mundane psychological ideas. So these things, in all areas of Krishna consciousness, the little deviations here and there, which if we take, then we can end up being separated from the association to devotees, being going away from the idea of Krishna consciousness. Maya is very, very subtle. It's just like someone comes to the door to try to sell you something. Now they may try to come inside your home, because if they know if they come inside your home, then it's very difficult, they know the technique, it will be very difficult to get rid of them without them taking advantage of you and exploiting you and selling you something you didn't want to buy. So in the same way, Maya is always trying to put some idea into our head. So if we adopt that wrong idea, then afterwards to get rid of it will be very difficult. So we should keep our intelligence pure by regularly studying Srila Prabhupada's books, chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, sticking to our sadhana, engaging in service to Krishna, associating with devotees. Otherwise, we may be caught up in simply Maya. You see, Sovari Muni, he was a highly advanced transcendentalist. He knew he was discriminating between which is Maya and which is not. That's why he became a transcendentalist. But then later, he lost his discrimination because he was not careful. Having come to the transcendental position, or having come to the platform of practicing transcendental life, he wasn't careful. He made a mistake. And it eventually led to his downfall. So we should be very careful of that. We're living in the world of Maya. Maya is all around us. Maya is always offering us. Enjoy. We should always be very expert in saying no to Maya. I know there's no enjoyment here. Let me enjoy chanting Hare Krishna. Then only we can be saved. I'd say a devotee can only be saved from fall down if he becomes completely pure. Otherwise, there's always danger. Unless we completely remove from our hearts all kinds of desires for material enjoyments, there's always a danger of being attracted by that Maya. And once Maya gets a hold of us, she takes over us, as she did with Sovari Muni. So we should be very careful. Hare Krishna. Is there any question? Devotees in the neophyte position, sometimes they feel like they're doing very nicely, and other times they feel weak, and Maya attacks them more, and they may become discouraged and think I'm not making any progress. Well, we have to, what to do in such a position? Well, the thing is, we have to make a vow to stick to Krishna consciousness. With our intelligence, we have to understand that it's required for me to practice Krishna consciousness. The activities of the mind are acceptance and rejection in terms of sense gratification. But the intelligence should rule the mind and not vice versa. So that with our intelligence, which becomes purified and strengthened by hearing and understanding this philosophy, we should understand that even if I may feel like this, I feel like I should go away, but by intelligence we should understand that there's no benefit in that. And that even if I'm making slow progress, or even if I'm apparently not making any progress at all, I have to go on with Krishna consciousness because that's the only beneficial activity. Doubts. Doubts are compared to demons. So doubts should be removed. If we have doubts, we should bring them out for cutting. There may be so many answers to this question. How to remain strong? Ultimately, that's up to the individual. Even we may be weak, but it's up to the individual to stick to the process. And we may not become strong very quickly. We are all weak before Maya. Become strong means we actually surrender to Krishna, then we get the help of Krishna. Otherwise, we're all weak. How to remain alive in Krishna consciousness? How to not succumb? Ultimately, we all have to make a deep decision in our hearts to stick with this. So if there's no question of leaving or going away, then there's no question. If we leave the question that, well, I'm trying it out, but after a few years or months or days or minutes, if I don't like it, then I'll go away. If we keep the door open for running away, then Maya will call us, yes, yes, come. But if we've already decided that under no circumstance am I going to leave devotional service to Krishna, and we don't even entertain such thoughts in our minds, then it will be much easier. Just like in the modern age, they have this talk about trying to make your marriage work. And if it doesn't, you'll get divorced. Try again. But if you say try, that means you're already conceding the possibility of failure. That means probably you will divorce, because there's no, what is an ideal marriage? Even in the most so-called ideal marriages, there's always some problem. But ideal means that the husband and wife, they live together with commitment to each other, not to simply run away and leave their responsibility. So in the same way, a devotee has taken the commitment that not to run away from devotional service. Now I've taken the commitment, I have to stick to it. And if you have that commitment, then through thick and thin, you'll stick with it and you'll get the result gradually. As long as we don't commit offenses to devotees. Even we are committing offenses. That's in social intercourse, there'll be some kind of wrong dealing or something like this. So we should be very careful not to commit offenses. But if there are, which there will be some misunderstanding, definitely. So we should. That's why we regularly pray to the devotees, please forgive me for my offenses. We see here, Sobari Muni fell down because of offenses to Vaishnava. So we should be very careful not to do that. Hare Krishna. You satisfied with your answer? There's no, it's not like you can take a pill, the anti-fall down pill, guaranteed. You won't fall. Or there's some special mantra you can chant. Or you simply go to Radha Kund and take a bath and then it's guaranteed you'll get Radha praying. So many people went and bathed in Radha Kund and now they're in a different consciousness altogether. So there's no magic. The magic formula is to actually surrender, take full shelter of Krishna. That is the magic formula. Until that time, we have to struggle with the mind and senses. So keep up the good fight. Don't become overwhelmed. It's very easy to become overwhelmed. But as long as we keep taking shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, then we won't be overwhelmed. Hare Krishna, Srimad Bhagavatam Mahapurana.